Well, I'd like to say, firstly, how very happy I am to be here. It's lovely to meet you and to see some of the other groups. We do see a lot of you in London in ones and twos, but not in groups. And I've really been very spoiled here, and I'm thoroughly enjoying myself. I think I should say straight away that I am not, I am by any manner of means a talker. It's not my line of country, but if I just sort of start off with a little bit of what I hope you'll be interested in, then if you ask me questions, I'll be very pleased to answer them if I can. I met Bob, as Brian said, through my husband, and I think I'll have to start with a little bit about him from the beginning, because that is the way I came to him. My husband, he was a good deal older than I was, and he was in the First World War. And he went through it, and it had a very marked effect on him, and he came out of it very discontented with organized religion as such. And he began to search afterwards for something that would satisfy him. And he went through all the various things. He tried the Society of Friends, he tried the spiritualism, numerology, all of them, anything. He went into everything and anything and never really found anything that satisfied him. And he was known in his, he was an insurance man, and he was known in his office for liking to discuss religion and any other topics, but he was not argumentative, but he liked an argument, if you know what I mean. And so he was well known for this. And one day, one of his colleagues came in to the office, and he said, "Oh, I've met another crank like you. You better meet him." And that was how he came to meet Will Beckett. And because Will Beckett also was in insurance, and they met, and Will told him a little bit about their travels to India. They'd just returned, I think, he and Mary from India, and gave Douglas some books to read. And well, as far as Douglas was concerned, that was it. He found what he wanted. This was just about the time we got married, actually. 1932, I should think, yes. Just after 1932, yes. We were married in 1932, and I should think it was just afterwards that he met Will. And he told me about it, and I thought it was a huge joke. I thought it was utter nonsense as far as I was concerned. And I teased him quite a bit about it, I'm afraid. Anyway, he was very wise. He never pushed it. The books were there, and he would tell me about little things that happened. He went to the meetings. There weren't many in those days. They were about once a month. Because he met Delia, of course, and Will and Mary. And we went on like that for some time. And then he said, would I like to meet Will and Mary? So we went to see them. And, of course, I was very taken with them, because they were an absolutely charming couple. Quite apart from the fact that they were Baba followers, they were charming people in themselves. And I had quite a rapport with Mary anyway. We seemed to hit it off. And I was sort of semi-interested, but not particularly. And then when we went on holiday at a time when Dr. Donkin came over to England, and we were away, and Douglas was very upset because he wasn't going to meet Donkin. But anyway, Will arranged for Douglas and another two or three people who had also missed Dr. Donkin. And he said to me, "Would you like to come with me?" So I said, "Yes, I'll come." So I went, and I was exceedingly impressed with Dr. Donkin. He was a lovely man and a charming man. And he just talked a bit, and I always remember his last closing words. He said, well, he said, I don't know, but he said, either Baba was who he said he was, or else he was a complete charlatan. And he said, I'm quite sure he's not a charlatan. And it was with such conviction, and there was something about him as well, that sort of thought, I thought, well, it must be right, you know. Well, then, in 1952, Baba came to England, and I met him for the first time then, only for two or three minutes, I suppose, at Charing Cross Hotel. And we were just taken in. My daughter came with me. And Douglas had seen him previously, of course. He'd had an interview with him, but he took us in just to see him and meet him. And a lot of people I know seem to have, it seems to be a very dramatic thing when they meet Baba. I didn't feel like that, but he said, he asked me, of course, you don't realise he didn't, of course, it was through Eric, but one always felt Baba spoke to you. It was most peculiar. You never felt that he wasn't speaking somehow. And he said, do you know about me? And I think I said, yes, a little. And he said, well, he said, do you know about God? I said, oh, yes. He said, well, so you know about me, don't you? And that was more or less it. I mean, you know, you were sort of in and out without realising you were in and out. And from then on, I started to read the discourses, and I started to go to the meetings with Douglas. And I met Charles Purdom, and he also was a very strong influence on me, because I loved Will and Mary very much, but I suppose I'm rather a practical person, too practical, I have no doubt. But I felt somehow what had sort of kept me back slightly was the not sentimentality, but well, I suppose it was some of the people seemed, to my way of thinking, and some of the writings struck me as being very sentimental and airy fairy. And it wasn't me. But when I met Charles, he was so different, and he was a lovely man. I was very fond of Charles, and he was so down to earth. And he was, of course, a very highly intelligent man and a very clever man. And he talked to me a lot. And I think from him I learned a lot. And I realized that you've got to have both sides. You've got to have Will and Mary's side, and you've got to have Charles's side. And obviously the thing to do is to get a happy medium. And from then on, I stayed in, and in 1956, Baba came again to England, and I met him then, and both my son and my daughter, my son came with us then, because my son is a zoologist, and as you know, scientists find it a little hard very often to, he's not a Baba follower, my daughter is. But anyway, he did come. He came. We all went as a family to meet Baba. And I remember going in. We went in one by one. We went up one by one. We were all in a big room. And there was a couch at the end where Baba was sitting. And he was giving darshan sweets, as he used to do. And we followed one on. And I went in. And you more or less had to kneel in front of him, because it was a very low divan. And I did, and I suppose I must have closed my eyes. I don't know why, but I did. It was something that one does somehow. And I can remember, feel his hands. He had beautiful hands, just round my face. And it was just so soft. And that's something I shall never forget. I often think of it, but I can still feel those hands around my face. And he gave me my sweet, and I went on, and the others followed on. And I think that was the beginning of my really feeling committed at that time. After that, after that, we had an upheaval in our committee, and Douglas was taken on as treasurer, and they asked me if I'd be secretary, so I was. So Douglas and I really held the fort in England for a number of years when we had very, very few people. That was during the, just after the war, really. Well, it was after the war, years before. And I think we always. I think this is. I don't think I'm saying anything I shouldn't when I say that I think in most Barber groups there are differences of opinion. And Douglas and I were always regarded our mission in life as being peacemakers between the various people who wanted one thing and somebody else who wanted the other. But we thought, well, if we took it on and did it together, at least the treasurer and the secretary wouldn't cross wobble. So that was one thing. We didn't. But then in 1962, we went to India for the Darshan. And that was absolutely simply marvellous, really. And it's very difficult to describe, really, because it's strange, because when we were there, the Mandali were there, of course, but somehow when Baba was there, you never saw anybody else, really. I mean, it didn't matter who else was there. We met them and talked to them. And of course, they were not, they weren't like they are now, they were very much in the background, really. But it was really marvellous to be with, the Westerners were with Baba every morning, and then we used to join in the big pandal in the afternoons with the Easterners. But we used to watch more or less in the afternoons, but we had the mornings where they were for us, and we were various things, other than various things done, and we had, but he was just sitting with Baba really and listening to him say things to various people in the audience, and then he'd walk through and we'd go back and sort of dream and back to our hotels. But it was really a very wonderful, wonderful experience. And I think then we went back home and we carried on. And then, of course, as far as the English group were concerned, we got an influx of young people round about the 1967-8. At that time, my husband was ill, and I didn't really take much part in the work at all. I had to. He gave up the treasurership, and I gave up the secretary because we just couldn't cope. And so I was really out of it for about a year. And when I returned after he died, that was, I think, not a turning point, because I already was a Baba lover by that time, but. During those time, my husband was ill for about a year, and we had a very trying couple of years. And I realised how much help I was given by Baba during that time. I couldn't have carried on as I had to, and there was somebody there always, I felt. And I had a very wonderful letter from Baba. When Douglas was ill, because he had cancer and he didn't know he had, and the doctor and I decided we wouldn't tell him until it was absolutely necessary. And Baba sent a note through Marnie and said, you know, he knew what was going on, and that he hoped that we would realise how blessed Douglas was, because he was suffering. with Wawa, because Wawa was very ill. We didn't realise how ill Wawa was then at that time. He obviously was. And he said that Douglas was sharing in his suffering and was very fortunate to be sharing in his suffering. And when he died, I had a cable from Marnie saying that Wawa said words something like this, that his dear Douglas had come to him, and he hoped that Anne and I and my family would not be sad, but be happy in his happiness. And from then on, I've just sort of gone back into the group and done what I can to help. I think that's really all I can tell you. But if you want, you know, if you want to ask me any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them.
Marie?
Yes.
Hi,
Marie. Hello. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Yes.
I didn't know I'd be up
Yeah, good.
Did you mention about your trip to India?
Oh, no, I didn't, did I? No. Yes, I went back to India last December. Because there was going to be a darshan, as you know, when Baba dropped the body. And I was going, I had arranged to go. But somehow, when Baba wasn't there, I somehow didn't feel I wanted to, so I didn't go. I think perhaps I should have done, but I didn't anyway. And when all the young people that were joining our groups, and they all came back, and they used to tell us all about their experiences and how they met all the Mandali and how they knew them and talked to them. And I suddenly thought, well, I don't know them like that. Because, of course, I hadn't been there when they were out in the world talking to people. And I suddenly thought, well, I think I would like to. And so Maxine Summers and I, who's one of our London Baba people, we went together. And I'm very glad I went. I enjoyed it very much. And it was marvellous to meet the Mandali and talk to them. Especially Marnie and Rano, whom I had met and I knew, and Mera, because of course I didn't know her. It was really very, very wonderful. I was very pleased. I'm very pleased I've been. I don't know that I necessarily want to go again, not yet anyway, but I'm very glad I have been now before things get too set out there, because I have a feeling that they are going to be a bit. Somehow I think it's almost bound, I suppose, to lose some of the simplicity that was such a wonderful thing about Baba and all his people in India. It was so very simple, and Baba always said he wanted it that way, and I feel that hopefully it won't get too set, but I'm glad I've seen it while it is simple. And I enjoyed it very much. It was really one rather funny incident. We were going to the Dooney Fire, and having heard the various stories about Dooney fires and people throwing sticks into Dooney fires and the awful things that happened to them afterwards, I said, I'm having nothing to do with it. I said, yes, I'll come, but I'm having nothing to do with it. And funnily enough, Maxine was, she wasn't well the day of the Dooney fire. She had been to India before and she'd been to a Dooney fire, so she said, I don't think I will come. She said, I'll be better if I rest. You go. So I went with Joyce Bird, who is one of the other English follower who came out with us. And we were sitting round the edge of the fire, and Padre got up and he said, is Maxine Summers here? And so I said, oh, I'm sorry, she's not very well. She's resting. So didn't say anything, but another few minutes, over he came to me, and he said, come on, said, I want you to light the fire. I said, I was going to ask Maxine, but he said, she isn't here. So he I suppose I must have looked horrified or was startled anyway. He said, it's all right, you needn't be afraid. He said, it's an honour. I thought, well, I don't know. Anyway, off I had to go and go and light this fire and throw in my sticks. I didn't get out of that one. Yes, I think I probably did. That was delightful. Pardon? Well, I don't think I was very careful what I you're supposed to wish, aren't you, or to make a prayer. I was very careful what I said, but I hope it wasn't. Nothing too awful has happened so far, anyway.
Well, I'll tell my
version.
She threw it in. It started burning. She got a bucket of water and threw it in.
No, not quite. And there is another really rather funny incident. It's not really, it's nothing to do with the visit really, but Maxine and I, as we were coming back, somebody had given, the Dooney ash is supposed to have properties of healing properties, isn't it? Especially the disciples feel that way. And Nargis had given Maxine a jar of this ash. And when we got back to London Airport, we had some things to declare, so we went through the declaration side. And so he said, I better see one case. He said, will you open one of your cases for you? We told him what we got. And so he chose Maxine's. He opened this case, and he brought out this bottle of ash, you know. So he looked at it, and he looked at us, but I was killing myself, because I thought, what's Maxine going to say? Poor Maxine, she took a deep breath, and she had to explain what this was, you see, and why. So he looked at her, so he put in his finger and he tasted it, and he gave it her back, and he shut the case up quick and shot it down. Oh, yes. What would it do for him? Yes. We none of us thought at the time, but somebody else in the group said when we were telling them, they said, yes, but what is going to be the effect on that particular man? It really was funny. I think, I don't know what he thought, but he thought we were a bit weird.
Oh, yes.
Well, you see, my husband was, he was very, very much involved, being secretary, being treasurer. And while he was there, I simply went with him, really. I mean, you know, I didn't take much part in the activity, other than the practical side. And I was always, I made the tea, and at the Christmas socials, I used to do the catering and that sort of thing. So I think we did. By the time I spent out at the kitchen making cups of tea, it's nobody's business. But there, you see, I suppose, you know, you've got to have all types, haven't you? Somebody's got to make the tea. And after all, I think, really and truly, it isn't what you do or what service you give. It's the love with which you give it, isn't it? I don't think it matters what you do, as long as you do something. No, we missed him. No, he wasn't there. He returned. He was there a bit later, I think.
Yeah,
he went a bit later.
He was there for Mary's birthday.
Ah, yes, no, we were just before that. Yeah. Yes, we'd returned home then, yes. Mm. I don't know if there's anything else you would like to ask, but I can tell you, it's not much. Yes.
Yeah. saw the clear back in about 1932?
Yes, yeah.
First met him in 1952?
Yes, yeah.
How would you describe the time in between? Did he grow on you in some respect or another? Did you become more familiar with him through reading and have some desire to get a chance to meet him? Or did it simply submerge out of time?
I think it grew. I think possibly because I realized more and more what it meant to Douglas. And there was one incident, it's not in much, but there was one time when, I suppose it was the beginning of the new life, but Barbara asked if anybody could make contributions to the care of the, I think it must have been for the Manderley he was leaving behind when he went off on his travels. And I remember Douglas saying to me, I think he had a small endowment insurance policy or something falling due. And he said he would like to give this money to Bauer for this work. This was really before I was really committed in a way. And we were a pair. I mean, we were a partnership. And Douglas would no more have dreamt of sending that money without telling me and my agreeing than I would have done giving it to anything else without his knowing. I mean, so he said he would like to do it. And what did I feel about it? And I remember saying that I felt that if we had money to give to charity, which we could afford it, I mean, but yes, I was perfectly willing, but I said I thought that it should go to a charitable thing in England. I said, you know, charity begins at home, so to speak, you see. And he tried to explain to me. And I really couldn't follow it. But he tried to explain it was very much more important, that this was very much more important than any charity that we could give it to. And I don't think I ever did quite, at that time, I didn't quite understand. But I said, well, if that's what he wanted, it's all right by me. And so the money went. And I think it made me think, really, a bit more probably than I had before. Because, well, I was leading a busy life and I hadn't a lot of time for reading. I had two young children. And I then started to read the discourses. And not too seriously, I think, but I did read them. And I think it was a very gradual process with me. It didn't sort of come over me in a flash or anything like that, really. I gradually came, and somehow, I suppose, Barbara just became part of the family in a way, if you know what I mean. And oh yes, he was okay. We used to have newsletters, Marnie's letters, Marnie's family letters, of course, were used to come out then. And he started in almost soon after. He went to the meetings as soon as he heard them. But as I say, there were very few and far between in those days. But he became more and more absorbed in it, and I think probably that was another of the reasons that brought me in, because I could see he was becoming more and more involved, and I suppose, quite honestly, I was jealous. And I thought, well, there must be something here. I must find out what it is, you see. And I suppose that was the way I became more involved with him. But it was nothing very active in those days in England anyway. It was a very quiet time, those times. And it was just beginning to pick up unfortunately, when Dallas died. But he was not a... He was what I would call a quiet follower of Baba. He didn't necessarily feel that you had to do anything. I mean, you know, you accepted Baba and you did your best to live your life as you knew he wanted you to do it. But he wasn't one really to do things as such, really. I mean, we had several speakers and we had Will Backett, Charles Pergam and Delia. And you see, they were alternate chairmen. They were in 6 monthly periods because Baba had set that up in 1956, I think it was. And so they sort of arranged the things, but we were a supporting role, really. We always regarded ourselves as that. And then, of course, unfortunately, we lost Will and then Charles. And both of them, it was a great blow to the English group because they were really the ones that held it together. And then of course, it was only after Charles... Well, Delia took over from Charles, of course, and we worked together. But she really sort of got the programs together and that sort of thing. We didn't do much in that line. We did the executive work and I did the catering and that sort of thing. But we were there. We were always there. But then, of course, I think it was only about 2 years after that Dallas became ill, after Charles died. But he wasn't, I often wonder, because it was after all our young people in England came with a rush in about 1969 onwards. And I knew when I went back after Douglas died, and I really felt quite at sea for a little while, because we'd never had any young people. I mean, my daughter and Alan Yule was with us at a time, occasionally when he was in England, but we had no young people at all. And it was quite an eye-opener to me, and I rather wonder what I got myself into for a little while. But I may soon found out. And we've gone from strength to strength from there. We're not a large group, but we have a nice lot of young people now. And I think that is one thing that is interesting. Of course, it's not peculiar when you think about it, about Baba. We're such a diverse lot, aren't we, of people. I knew at the opening of Oceanic, Kim, one of the very old disciples that was with Adelia in the very early days, she came and they made a little film about her. And she brought her son-in-law and daughter. Her son-in-law is a very well-known doctor. And they were not interested in Baba as such at all. But they came because they wanted to see Kim's film. And I remember her saying to me, she said, you know, she said, I wish they weren't coming. She said, I should feel most uncomfortable. And anyway, they came. And so I said to her afterwards, and I said, well, what did your family think? She said, oh, she said, you know, she said, my son-in-law was most impressed. He said he had never, it was so unusual to see elderly people, very young people, children, and such a diverse section of the population. And he thought it really obviously impressed him. But of course, I mean, that's as it should be, isn't it? I mean, well, that's for all of us, isn't it? But I think it is something that people do, that outsiders do find either impressive or difficult to understand, that so many different kinds of people can get on together. But we have certainly found that in England. Mm-hmm. No. he never told me to do anything. And I don't think he ever gave Douglas any specific instructions. No, I think that's what he said more or less was, love me and do carry on your life in the world and do your best. After all, I always, if anybody asks me, that's another thing I find most difficult, is if somebody tackles me and asks me to explain who Baba is and why I'm a follower. But I always think that all one can say is, Baba said, love me and love your neighbour as yourself, really. That's the essence of it, isn't it? And I think if you can try to do that, if you really can try to do that, I think it's one of the most difficult things, isn't it, to love everybody. I mean, you've got to try and find what there is to love in everybody, haven't you? And it's very difficult sometimes, isn't it? but that's another thing. I think, I suppose that is my way of trying to do what Baba has asked us to do, is to try. And because I have found that, I mean, we're only human after all, aren't we? And instinctively, sometimes you meet somebody and you're not drawn to them and you think, I don't think I like them. And then you think, well, you're supposed to like them, get on with it. And if you do try, it's amazing. It is. If you go out of your way to try and love that person, whether you really like them or not, I mean, you don't soon find that there's something to love there. And I think that's the only way I can try following Baba is to do that, to try to love my neighbours as myself. I don't get anywhere near it, but I mean, one can but try. To work with them?
Learn to work with other people.
I think, well, obviously, you've got to see, to try always to see their point of view as well as your own. And to try, I don't know quite how to put it, but I mean, if I have ever had any role in the London Group, I haven't had any role very much, but the one I have tried to do is to try to be impartial, because I find that there are always differences, and I think sometimes people get so concerned with their differences they forget how much they can agree on if they only put their minds to it. And also to admit you're wrong, because it's very hard to do it, it is, but I'm sure it is very much better. One sees people are so dogmatic over things, and if you try at any rate to learn to say, well, yes, I'm sorry, perhaps you're right, it doesn't hurt you. But very often it will help. I mean, perhaps you are right. Perhaps you're wrong. But perhaps you're right when you say you're wrong. But it doesn't hurt you to admit that you can be wrong. And I think there are a lot of us who don't do that. And you set up a barrier. And I don't know if you. I mean, I'm fairly good at getting on with people. I can get on with most people, but. I think you've got to work at it, really, and to try not to judge, and to realise that although they may be thinking on a different line to you, they at least are doing their best. That's what they think. But if you wade in and say, no, that's not right and I'm not doing it, well, I mean, you're not getting anywhere. You're just going knocking your head against a stone wall, aren't you?
Yeah.
I think perhaps it's the Iron Hand in the Velvet Glove, is it? Whatever it is, something like that. But otherwise, I don't know. I think it's one of the hardest things to do, but one can only just try and keep things together. Yes, yes, oh yes, yes, I've known Fred for many years. Yes. No, I don't think so. A sadness, of course, that you will never see him again, because it was a very wonderful thing to see him, and there was something about his eyes, I think, especially, that, I mean, you knew jolly well they'd be looking right through you, and that you didn't have to say anything, you know. I mean, he knew. I mean, you didn't need to say anything, really. But there was one incident when, that was in 56, when we went, a lot of us went to see him off, flying back to India. We went to the airport, and I was with Mary Beckett, I think, and Douglas was there somewhere, I don't know where, but we were all just clustered round him. And I was standing behind because I wasn't really one of the closer ones, you know, and I can remember Mary Beckett getting hold of my hand and pulling me in beside her. And I remember Baba just looking at me. And, you know, it was such a wealth of love there that it was quite incredible. And that's another thing I'll never forget. Just the way he looked. Yeah, he looked at you. And you felt it was for you personally. Well, it was, I think. But it was beautiful. But, I know a lot of people. I don't think I'm quite one of the people that do feel that. I mean, one knows he is always with you, and obviously, I mean, you think of him every day and at odd times, any time. But I don't think I've noticed any difference. One just knows that if you're in trouble, well, there's support there somehow. And I do think there's another thing I always do feel. We're all very much inclined, at least I don't know, I'm speaking for myself, perhaps I should say I'm very much inclined, to go to, not to pray to Baba, but to sort of say to Baba, ask Baba for help when we're in trouble. But I do think we ought to all try to remember to thank him when something nice happens to us. And I think sometimes we forget that when we're happy. I don't know whether we do, but I do, and I have to remind myself to say thank you for all the nice things that happened to me, as well as for asking for support in the times of trouble.